Welcome to Hebrew Bible Insights, a podcast about making sense of the Hebrew Bible. I'm Matthew Delaney. In this episode, I talk with a good friend of mine who she's an expert in Judaic Christian studies. And so she really looks at that Second Temple period time with a special interest in the time period of when the Gospels were written. She has a lot of deep research that she's done into understanding the culture of Judaism at this time period. And she gives some really great gold on a lot of Jesus' teachings and his parables. In today's episode, we dive in specifically to the Good Samaritan. If you listen to one of my previous podcast episodes about the story of Ruth, you'll know that I mentioned this story of Good Samaritan. I see that Ruth and the Good Samaritan, in my opinion, are similar stories. Well, today I love getting to have her on the show to give us more information, some deep insights into why this parable is so significant. It's a story we maybe are all familiar with, but whenever you hear Katya talk about this, you'll realize there's so much more gold underneath the surface. So without further ado, let's dive into today's episode. All right, everyone, welcome to another episode of Hebrew Bible Insights. I'm really excited for this one because I get to have a guest with me. I always prefer dialogues over monologues, although I just enjoy teaching in general. So if no one's with me, I'll do it myself. But today I have a great guest actually at her home office, and we just got to go through her whole huge, massive library. All you nerds out there, you guys should probably be jealous. She has so many books on all the things that she's been learning. And she has some fascinating stuff that I'm excited for her to share today. Obviously, she can't share all the gold that she has because, man, she gets deep into the research. And so for any of you listening today, you're going to find a lot of gold. So without further ado, I want to introduce Katya. How are you doing?
Hi, thank you for having me.
So before we start, can you just introduce yourself a little bit, talk maybe a little about your background, and particularly, you know, how did you get into studying the Bible? What are your main interests with Bible study?
Sure. I am originally from Bulgaria. I came to the States 2005, so I've been here for a little while. I came with the desire to study photography and graphic design, so that's what I did in college for a little while, and then I decided that I kind of just wanted something a little bit more meaningful in life, and so I headed over to the theology department. They didn't really know what to do with me. I kind of ended up ending in this class with a retired professor who happened to teach languages, and on my very first class, he claimed me for the world of biblical scholarship. So I kind of tumbled into it, and he began actually with teaching me Modern Standard Arabic.
Wow.
I did it very much backwards. I did not start my biblical languages until like my second year into it. So I did Hebrew and then I did Greek. That ended up being my major, biblical languages, in undergrad. And then I kind of took a while afterwards. I didn't know what I wanted to do with myself. And I happened to be reading a book that I thought was very fascinating, and that happened to be written by a professor who actually taught at ORU. And I wrote to him. Lo and behold, he actually emailed me. That was a miracle in its own.
That's an inside joke there.
And I came to Tulsa. And I actually dropped out of school. I didn't start my very first year because I wasn't sure that that's what I was supposed to be doing. Came back the next year and I ended up getting two master's degrees. One was in biblical languages, the other one in Judeo-Christian studies. I also tumbled into teaching Hebrew at a private Christian high school afterwards. I did that for 3 years until COVID hit, and then, you know, people lost their jobs, kind of type of thing, and I was one of them. So I thought, God, I feel like you have called me to teach and to share all this. Who am I going to share it with? And then I thought, hey, it's COVID. Everyone is online. Mm-hmm. So let's just try to share it with everyone that you can. And I always believed that I did not want to be the hardcore scholar type. At least I didn't want my audience to be the hardcore scholars type, because truly, I don't believe that anyone really cares about what they're sharing, as long as they can push out something new and that it can be scholarly and it can be written as complicated as possible. We very much share that, you and me, that the message should be simple. So my goal is to take that, the deep research, and to try to present it to everyday people in layman terms as much as possible. And that's why I started my YouTube channel.
Yes, which I'm excited that we'll get to plug here at the end of this episode, because I guarantee you after this conversation, you guys are going to want to hear more. You know, I love, first off, I can confirm what your passion is, right? You wanting to go into deep research, but then being able to share it with people in a way they can understand. Because Katya mentioned that she doesn't want her audience to be academic as her audience, but trust me, she is very academic in how she does her research. She is one of the most detailed, thorough researchers I know. There's one scholar who said this. I heard him say this last week. He said, unfortunately, a lot of academic work is just the repeating of past mistakes, which basically means you have people doing research and no one's really doing their fact-checking really well. They're not really digging into footnotes. She does intensive research, and so you'll feel that in the stuff that she does. But when she shares it, she sifts through all that material to make sure what you hear is something that's accurate, that's precise, that you can trust. And one of the things I just wanted to point out in your story that I just think was great, that I think is good for all of us, is it's amazing how our life, you know, the journey of life goes. I think that no matter how intentional we are, or no matter what things we decide to do or take our next steps, I personally think it's amazing how God ends up leading in our lives, where we take one step and you never know what the next step will be. But I think God truly works all things out for good. And he does it in such a way where, in my words, I would say we can never take credit for it.
Yeah.
And because the way that I ended up doing this kind of stuff, teaching, and it's crazy for me. You know, because I didn't start learning Hebrew because I wanted to. I didn't do that because I thought, hey, this sounds like a great, fun thing to do. I did it because I was running away from Spanish. You know, my motives were not noble or theological in nature whatsoever. You know, I was working at a church and had an amazing time. They never thought that I would be teaching Hebrew, never thought I'd be teaching Hebrew Bible stuff. So anyhow, without further ado, I want to dive into more of your content, though. And I'll never forget whenever we were at a coffee shop talking and you started talking about the Good Samaritan. I heard once someone say this one time, is the only thing better than a story you've never heard before is a story you think you know. So that's exactly how I felt at that coffee shop. I felt I was hearing a story that I knew before, I've heard it plenty of times as a kid, and you were sharing in such a way where there's so much more gold to it. So before we actually get into the story, I'd just like to hear what got you interested into this story? Why do you think this parable of Jesus is so important?
Well, honestly, I love so many of the parables, and I felt like I wanted to share them all. But I figured I had to start somewhere, and for some reason, I kept being pulled back to this one. I don't really know why. And when I first started doing the research and I decided I was going to do this one first, I really didn't know what it was that I was going to find. I knew that it was good. I knew some of the main things, but it was definitely not as much as I ended up digging in the process of researching.
So there's obviously way more in this story than we can go over in one podcast episode, but I was wondering if you can just kind of take our audience through just a few points of the story that maybe we could share, at least today, in this conversation.
Sure. Well, to begin with, I mean, the story is pretty simple. Like you said, everyone has heard of a Good Samaritan, or, you know, referred to the Good Samaritan. And it's, on the surface, it's a very simple story. It's a man who is traveling, he's been robbed, and then you have a priest and a Levite who walk by, and they just pass by on the other side. They don't stop by to help. Then the Samaritan comes, he stops, he helps the man, takes him to an inn, and makes sure that he's taken care of. And that's it. I mean, it's easy peasy. So obviously, as modern readers, we tend to put ourselves in that situation, we imagine that it's a scenario that can happen to us today. So, for example, we would put ourselves in the role of the Samaritan, and anyone who is in trouble or who has need is obviously the man who's been beaten on the side of the road. So let's just be the nice person who helps out a person in need. And it's not that that's wrong. I mean, that tends to be the overall theme of the parable, but we miss so much the depth and the strength of the message that Jesus is trying to convey is so much stronger if we understand the context of where it's coming from, the way that the original audience of the parable would have heard it. So I think that we just would benefit so much more if we were a part of that context.
So I'm on the edge of my seat. Can you please maybe share one of those things?
Sure. So, for example, one of the most important things is, why did Jesus choose a Samaritan? I mean, he literally could have picked anyone. And in fact, there are scholars who argue that the Samaritan wasn't even the original part of the parable itself, that it probably was a regular Israelite and not a Samaritan.
Can we unpack that a little bit? Does that mean that what the parable, are you saying that what the parable Jesus was saying was kind of a generic parable that other rabbis would have taught, but Jesus was putting a spin on it?
No, what I'm saying is that there's obviously that whole problem with the Synoptic Gospels and the original version that scholars are trying to reconstruct, because they say, oh, the editor of the Gospel of Luke did changes to the original wording and teaching of Jesus. So this is the editor of the gospel that's speaking. This was not Jesus himself.
Oh, interesting. So what's your stance on that? Do you think that Luke edited this and had Jesus say Samaritan, or was Jesus actually doing Samaritan?
Well, I agree with a lot of the other scholars who say, no. This makes plenty of sense the way that it is.
So what you're saying is that this parable is so shocking, the way Jesus told it. There are scholars who think, Luke probably edited this. There's no way that Jesus actually would have made the Samaritan the character of this parable.
Possibly. There definitely is a split in the scholarly community. You know, in the scholarly world, you always have to disagree, because otherwise it's just
everyone's
not
got an opinion.
Interesting. Yes.
So what makes the Good Samaritan so controversial? Because as a 21st century American, Samaritan means nothing to me. Might as well be an Oklahoman, a Canadian, whatever, just a person. What's the big deal with Samaritan?
Well, the big thing about the Samaritans was that the Samaritans and the Jews were enemies. And yes, we have heard that from the Gospels, but I remember that a few years ago, I did not really know why were they enemies. Who exactly were the Samaritans? What was the big deal with them? So when I started reading and researching, I learned about all this back history that goes between them, that really went back to the time when the Jews came back from captivity from Babylon, and they went to rebuild the temple in Jerusalem. And so the Samaritans came down from the north and said, hey, we're going to help you out. And the Jews said, no, you are a mixed breed. Go away. We're going to do this on our own. And that happened because the Samaritans were technically the leftover Israelites who had intermarried with other populations that had been brought in by the Assyrian Empire earlier. So the Jews did not consider them to be pure Israelites, pure Jews anymore. So the Samaritans did not really take the rejection very well. They started opposing the Jews in their building projects, and that kind of tended to escalate throughout those few centuries until the time of Jesus. And it got to the point that, Josephus tells us, a little bit after the time of Jesus, there was an incident where a bunch of Jews were going down from Galilee to Jerusalem for the pilgrimage holidays or festivals. And they were attacked by Samaritans, and whether one or a few individuals were killed by Samaritans. So there was a whole bunch of Jewish nationalists that rose up in retaliation, and they ended up killing and slaughtering a whole bunch of Samaritan men, women, and children, until finally the Roman procurator had to come up with his Roman army and kill a whole bunch of those rebels.
Wow.
So it was a very charged environment. Obviously, when Jesus decided to put the Samaritan in the parable, that did not make his listeners comfortable at all.
Yeah.
Because nothing good could come if there was a Samaritan involved there.
Hmm. Wow. Okay, so what's the, how are we supposed to view this conflict then between Jesus' audience, the parable he's saying, the Samaritan?
Well, the parable itself was in the text. It's spoken to a Torah scholar who asked Jesus a question. And it's very important that you don't just take the parable on its own, but it was part of Jesus' response to a different question.
Okay.
So that's what this whole segment in the text is about. It's okay. Not just about the parable, it's about the pre-parable introduction.
Sure.
Which happens to be a Torah scholar, someone who is very much aware of the teachings of the Torah. It's not just a regular Joe Schmo out of nowhere. He's a learned man. He stands up and he asks Jesus about what must he do to be saved. He answers his own question, love God, love your neighbor. And then he ends up asking Jesus, well, who is my neighbor? So the whole point of this parable is, who is my neighbor? And that seems like a very simple question.
It does. It really, it's like, it almost sounds like a dumb question in one sense.
Yeah.
Or really deep. I'm not really sure. I'm like, who's my neighbor? Why are we asking this? And I have to say, to your point, this whole scene too, the way you're describing it seems really interesting. I'm imagining like an event where like maybe a big public speaker is coming, like a conference maybe, and they have time for questions where they have the mics out and they have questions. And often, you know, you'll have people who either maybe they disagree, maybe they're genuinely curious, but you have people asking the expert. And it seems the way what you've described, that it's a Torah scholar who is asking this question. It almost feels like suddenly at this conference, another epic level, like scholar is asking a question. I imagine like, whoa, what's going on here? Like, this is different. And it makes sense that you would say he answers his own question because, well, I mean, he's a scholar. So again, I might be reading too much into this, but this scene's very interesting. So then you have him now asking, well, who's my neighbor? Now it's really interesting to me. So what's the deal with this? Who's my neighbor?
It is, because it's like, yeah, you should know better. I mean, obviously, who is your neighbor? Because, well, it's your next door neighbor.
Yeah.
But technically, the idea of neighbor, that was more than just a neighbor. The verse in Leviticus 19 that talks about you shall love your neighbor as yourself, actually in its proper context refers to loving your fellow citizen as yourself. So this is not a universal context. A few verses later, it does talk about love the stranger who is among you. But this specific verse is love your fellow Israelite, I guess. So different groups at the time disagreed as to who was to be a part of that group neighbor, because I'm supposed to love my neighbor and treat him with love. But who is it that is going to be making use of that love? So there was obviously the Jewish group that lived in Qumran that wrote the Dead Sea Scrolls. They had one interpretation. The Sadducees had a different one. The Pharisees had a different one. Some said, oh, you're going to hate everyone who's just not one of us. Others would say that, oh, well, the Samaritans were definitely not a part of that group.
Oh, interesting. So this was actually a debate in that time period.
His
question, who is my neighbor? To us, it feels like, why are you asking this for? But for this guy to ask this question, he was asking one of the hot topic questions of the day.
Yes.
Where maybe it was, I don't know what the best example would be, but I think we all know there's certain controversial topics. If someone asked that question at the conference or in class, everyone's like, oh, he's asking that question?
Yes.
Is that how it would have felt, kind of, you think?
Yes, kind of. I think that he was kind of testing Jesus to see which camp he fell in.
Okay.
Because it's like, well, obviously there's these people and these people and these people. So which people do you side with? Like, where do you say that the line
Is it
is?
worth getting into this conversation what the certain camps were, or is that getting too detailed for today?
We can't really know 100%. The one that we definitely know was the Dead Sea Scrolls, who taught everyone who's not a part of our group should be hated. And general rabbinic sources that we have, earliest ones that we have, talk about how Samaritans and Gentiles, anyone who was not a part of actual Jew, should not be included in that group of neighbor.
Okay.
But it's possible that there were other ones that we just don't know about. There were other groups. There was the Herodians. There was heretics. There was tax collectors. Should those be counted as our neighbors? So the man was just wanting to test Jesus as, where do you stand on this issue?
Okay. So basically, let me make sure I understand this right then. So for the ancient Jewish people, there was a debate about this, but whatever camp you were in, the reason this question mattered is there's a certain way that I treat people of this type, and there's a way I treat people of different types. So
Yes.
depending on what group those people are, there's a certain way I'm supposed to treat them.
Yes.
Is that a fair way of putting
I
it?
believe so.
Okay. And is it worth getting into more detail about how they would treat them differently? Or should we just go into just focusing on the neighbor part? Because like if I'm listening, someone might think, okay, so Jews would treat neighbors one way. Does that mean that Jews, for example, if they are the neighbor category, treat them well? If they're the not neighbor category, treat them badly? Is that as simply as they put it? Or is
Yeah,
that
there's
oversimplistic?
I think that there would have been certain things that you would do, or you would forgive, or you would try to, if anything, even like compensate something for damage or something like that, depending on is that person a close person or not a close person. And I'm not entirely sure of all the details.
Gotcha.
I should go do more research on that.
So maybe just answer this question for us then. So it seems in our conversation in the past, it wouldn't so much be there are people you should love and then there are people you should hate. Now, maybe the Dead Sea Scroll communities were a little more extreme according to what
Yeah.
you've said, but it's more like the neighbor, is that like one of the highest categories, if you will? Like this is the person that you're supposed to do the most for?
Yes, well, obviously, if that's one of the main commandments that was taught at the time, it was, love your neighbor as yourself, so treat him the way that you're treating yourself. Obviously, you had to do something that was above and beyond, that you should be, doing some sort of sacrifice for them.
Okay. So I think this makes sense. Now, I could be wrong in this, but because I feel like for some of the listeners, we might sit here thinking, man, the Jews are jerks in that time, right? They might think, gosh, what are you doing? Like, why would you? But I think we kind of intrinsically understand this. I think we don't really treat everyone the same. Like we have our category of people that we would sacrifice for,
Yeah.
and others, it's more, I'm going to live my life. I'm going to try to be a good person, but I'm not gonna, go all out of my way. Like at least practically,
Yeah.
I know as Christians, I think we really do our best to love others really well,
Yeah.
but practically we end up, if someone were to analyze our life, then there's certain people, however we tend to view that, whether it's family, friends, coworkers, there's certain degrees that we try to love pretty intentionally. So maybe I'm getting too practical and modern here. I'm just trying to maybe put it in a framework some way.
Yeah, and we should not forget that the Jewish people were very much nationally oriented. They had always been a people that was very close-knit. So other people were viewed as outsiders because they were idolaters. They did not follow the God of Israel. So obviously they would not treat everyone the same way because, they're not a part of that inner circle.
Okay. So I know I asked a lot of questions there. So bring it back then to where you were taking this. So it's something about the significance of why I asked who's my neighbor, and so how does that tie in?
Yeah, so the overall message of the parable. So the way that Jesus brings us to the end And the ending is, go and do like the Samaritan did. That's the ending message of the parable. So the reason it's actually it's a controversial ending, and it is also one of those things that's debated whether it was there to begin with or not. Meaning whether the person who wrote the Gospel of Luke put it in there, because Jesus does not answer the question of the Torah scholar.
Mm.
The question was, who is my neighbor so that I would treat them with love?
Mm-hmm.
In the end of the parable, Jesus asks, who of these three, it seems to you, acted like a neighbor to that man? And the Torah scholar says, well, the one who showed compassion to him. Mm-hmm. And Jesus says, go do likewise. But that's, Jesus, that's not what I asked.
Right, right, yeah.
So I sat and I chewed on this and I pondered on this for mm-hmm. so long. And it felt like there was something there that I was not getting.
Yeah.
Why was it important that there was a Samaritan there? There had to be an importance there. And different people had different interpretations. There's definitely so many views out there on what is the actual significance of this parable. And for me, I think that I ended up combining two different ways of interpreting it. I think that Jesus's words actually not only answered the question of the mm-hmm. Torah scholar, but they actually went even further than that.
Mm.
So there's two things that came out of it. One is, who do you treat as your neighbor?
Mm.
And we are answering this question from the viewpoint of the Samaritan. So if we imagine that we're the Samaritan, Jews are our enemies. So who are we treating as a neighbor? It's going to be our bitter enemy. Mm. The one who definitely does not like us. The one that we can definitely get in trouble for helping. I mean, with the Samaritan stopping on the road, he didn't know. He might have had some Jews come on the way and say, you're the one who attacked this man. And we saw that based on that bloody encounter that was to take place a few years later, that was a very viable option. So when the Samaritan stopped to help, he did so at expense of his own safety, possibly.
Yep.
So who do you treat as your neighbor, and how do you treat them as a neighbor?
Yep.
And that part is very important, because mm-hmm. the man, the Samaritan man, he pays 2 denarii. And we just like, well, he gave him some money.
I have no idea. Is that a couple nickels? Is that like 10 bucks? I have no idea what denarii is, right?
Yeah. So it really was what you would have made in 2 days. So it's the wage that you get for 2 days. But it was way above and beyond what you would pay for just staying at an inn. So he wanted to make sure that man was taken care of. But he was taken care of above and beyond, not just like, oh, give the man some water over there.
Right.
No, make sure that this man is taken care of. And if there's anything else that he needs, I'm going to pay you more on my way back. So I am treating my worst enemy here, and I'm going above and beyond, not only to help him while he's in need, but to help him recover until he's recovered and no longer needs my need. And that's a very tough pill to swallow.
Yeah.
I think as a message for us, because Jesus is not just teaching be nice to people.
Mm.
He is teaching you need to really get out of your comfort zone.
Yeah.
You need to put yourself out there. You need to, I mean, go to your next door neighbor that you hate and help them out.
Wow.
If they're in need. And wow. Go above and beyond. Not for just like the way that you would do for a close friend or a relative. Like, you know, hey, here's some money. I know that you're in need. Don't worry about it. But the dirtbag who's living next door and who has been, you know, putting, I don't know, shooting your dog.
Oh my God. Wow. You went there. That was very intense. That's someone with two dogs. That goes straight to the heart.
Yeah. And treat that guy the way that you would treat your closest friends. So it was definitely a controversial, a very difficult message that Jesus was trying to send.
Wow. So challenging. So good. Sokacha, if we want to learn more about this parable and other things, of course, that you're studying and researching and putting out stuff. I know right now you're in the middle of, at least at the time of the recording of this podcast, you're in the middle of producing your current YouTube video series on the Good Samaritan. Yes. If we want to find more information, I'm telling you guys, there's so many little details. I mean, that even in the one that I just watched yesterday, where she points out the significance of why either the priest or the Levite is going down the road and going on the other side, how somehow those phrases really matter. It blew me away. So if we want to find out more of those type of things, where do we go?
You can go to my YouTube channel, which is called Scripture in Context. And you can also find my Facebook page, which is called the same. I post updates there on my videos, little tidbits on the production, on the background, things like that.
Excellent. Kacha, as a friend, love getting to have you on this episode. Love the work that you're doing. And thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks. It's been awesome.
Thanks for listening to today's episode. If this is something that's been a blessing to you, if Hebrew Bible Insights is something that is a helpful resource, there are a few great ways that you can support me in this ministry. First is liking, subscribing, and sharing the podcast is a great help. And for those of you who would like to support financially, you can find me on my Patreon page at Hebrew Bible Insights. So if you want to stay up on all the newest information for Hebrew Bible Insights, you can find me on Facebook at Hebrew Bible Insights. You can find the podcast on Apple, Google, and Spotify podcasts. Thank you for all you do, and I look forward to seeing you in the next episode.